This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 105.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got a great interview for you with Phil Pallon, branding strategist who's based in LA, who is just full of ideas for you about how you can make your brand more memorable. But before we get to the main part of the show, just wanted to quickly remind you about my writing masterclass on November the 24th in London. So if you're listening in the future, that's November 24th, 2016. It's my Soulful Writing Masterclass, and basically it's a class that's dedicated to writing articles for the media. So things like opinion articles, practical how-to articles, the kind of thing that you might write for the Huffington Post or Business Insider, Forbes, and also really powerful first-person articles. And the thinking behind this particular event was really that I was working with coaching clients and also people in my business club who were doing really, really well when it came to getting yeses from editors to write content for the media, but were then getting a little bit scared about how to actually produce that content. So if you're somebody who would love to do more of that kind of writing, but feel that you'd just like a little bit more help, a little bit more guidance on how to write effectively for the media, so how to write content quickly, how to adjust your style for different purposes and audiences, then I think this will be really, really useful for you. And I would love to see you there. So I'll put a link in the show notes. And as ever, I do love hearing from you about what you think of the show and also your ideas on who else I might want to talk to and what else I might want to cover. And you can email me at janet@janetmurray.co.uk, or you can tweet me at @jan_murray, or you can come over and find me on Instagram at @janmurrayuk. So joining me on the show today is Phil Pallon. Now, Phil is a celebrity brand strategist, and I first met him when I heard him speak at the New Media Europe conference in Manchester about 18 months ago now, and we've been firm friends ever since. Now, Phil has helped me with my branding, and he's also helped many of my clients too, and has the honour of being the very first Soulful PR podcast guest to come back twice for a second interview. So welcome to the show, Phil.
Thank you for having me. And I am really proud of that honor. I joke, but I actually mean it when I say that you're a podcasting queen. It's amazing how many new episodes you make, and they're all so good. I listen to all of them. So I am really excited to be the first returner.
Well, thank you for coming back. And the reason I wanted to invite you back is because you've just got so much amazing knowledge about branding, as you would as a brand strategist. And people are always asking me questions about their website and their social media and their photographs and all this kind of stuff. So I just thought I've got to get the expert on here. I've got to get him back so he can answer all of those questions. But for people who don't know you, and I think lots of people who listen to the Soulful PR podcast will already know you, and it's episode 5 if you want to go back and have a listen. But for those people who don't know Phil Pallon, do tell us a little bit about you.
Absolutely. So I'm a brand strategist based in LA, but whenever I say that, I always clarify, I'm very rarely there because I travel the world. I've got clients and projects happening all around the globe. And of course, I go often to the UK, where you and I partner and collab on events and all kinds of content and exciting things. I help people build their brands, basically, and I approach that process in 3 steps. Position your brand, build something to show for it, and then promote it. And that's why you and I work so well together, because often where you're focused on helping people promote their brands through their media, PR, all of these kinds of things, editorial placement, guest blogging, I sometimes encourage people to revisit those first 2 steps. How are we positioned? What have we built to show for your brand, including visuals and website, to make that promote phase that much more successful for you? I started, and it's a long story that I'll keep very short. I started about 5 years ago. My career kicked off when I was in the running to become Charlie Sheen's social media intern. In this competition, I got a lot of press. So press actually started my career and allowed me to get my first client that watched my social media campaign. I didn't end up doing the internship with Charlie Sheen. I had an opportunity with Ryan Seacrest as well. And the ironic part was, I didn't do any of these internships. I started a business. I built a brand that people could hire me for. And that's where it all began.
Okay. So you almost became Charlie Sheen's and almost became Ryan Seacrest's social media intern. Quickly tell us, for those people who don't know, what happened? Where did it all go wrong? All right, maybe.
Right. It was, I know from whenever I do talks and I describe my story, I put up this image of the Toronto Star, which wrote an article about me called Sorry Sheen, Hello Seacrest. That was the title, with my big head and all the words wrapped around. That article was the best and worst thing that ever happened to me, because I announced that I was moving to LA 2 weeks before I was set to start interning for Ryan Seacrest, and I actually got fired by Ryan Seacrest because I connected his brand to Charlie Sheen's brand in the media. So they got all of these Google alerts. They were like, who is this punk? Who's this guy who says he's working with us? No one at the team even knew, because I hadn't started my internship yet. And they said, well, we have to fire you before you even start, because we have million-dollar advertisers threatening to drop. So I literally moved to LA with nothing, and I had to kind of figure it out. How do I build my network? How do I build and position a business that people care about, that people are willing to pay money for? And that is what has really strongly inspired my philosophy on all of this, not having corporate experience I use to my advantage.
Okay. Well, can we start by talking about what we actually mean by branding?
Yeah, it's so interesting, because so many people, especially in the branding space, have their own definition of exactly what a brand is. Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon, for example, says your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room. You know, and so I agree with that. My definition is a little bit different. What motivates me to do the work that I do in many different industries, in many different countries, clients big and small, is I try to achieve consistency between the in-person experience and the online version that represents you. So, you know, we have the fortune of being together in person so many times. I saw you a few days ago. And when we're in person, I get to understand your personality, your perspective, and your content that you share when we're face to face. Online, it's not quite that simple. We have to overcompensate a little bit so people get a sense of our personality and obviously get a sense of your content. And if those two experiences are consistent, that, in my opinion, is the formula for success.
Okay, so when somebody's in-person brand, or how they come across in person, when there's a kind of inconsistency between that and how they look online, how does that kind of manifest itself?
Yeah, that's a great question. The best example I can give you is online dating, which has nothing to do with business. But if you're someone that is online dating, you consume someone's brand based on how they've positioned themselves and built something to show for it. So the photos, the bio, you know, the things I wouldn't know by looking at you, you know, these kinds of like typical questions you'd fill out if you're creating a dating profile. If we decide to meet in person, Janet, go along with me. We're gonna go on a date. If we get together in real life and you see me and I don't look anything like my photos, I don't seem anything like what I've described myself as, that is never a positive experience. Whereas if you get a sense of my personality, my photos accurately show who I am now, today, then that is a positive experience. You feel like you've already gotten to know me, even through the content that I've created online. The exciting thing for businesses and brands is that you have control over that first impression, and you can craft that so that it's perceived in a positive way.
That's really interesting, because that happens so much in dating, doesn't it? I mean, I've not done online dating myself. I've been married for quite a long time. But my friends who do tell me that that happens to them so often. So they find somebody that they like on Tinder, they arrange to go and meet them. And in one classic example, actually, one of my friends said that she was expecting to meet someone who looked like Brad Pitt, and he actually looked like Bob Hoskins, which is quite a big difference. But that kind of happens all the time, isn't it? So what you're saying is that the sort of inconsistency that you get in dating, you know, when your heart sinks because you meet somebody and they're not at all what they appeared like online, that's kind of what it's like when it goes wrong for a business owner.
Exactly. And some people will say to me, Phil, does everyone need a brand? And I say, everyone already has a brand. Nowadays, it's not a luxury. It's an expectation. So I would go so far as to say it is your responsibility in 2016 to represent yourself accurately online. I don't mean you need to look like a model in your headshot. All I mean is that you need to look like you. You need to convey who you are, why people should care online, because whether you like it or not, people are going online to Google you, to consume you, to get a sense of who you are, possibly and most likely before they meet you in real life. This opportunity to brand yourself gives you control, gives you more control over that first impression. And that's really my perspective on how I define branding in a way that makes sense.
Okay. And what I think you're really getting at here is authenticity, aren't you? So I guess it would be easy to go online and to have amazing photos done and get them photoshopped and to kind of create this whole kind of lifestyle that isn't really yours. But that seems to be what you're getting at, authenticity.
Oh, absolutely. It goes without saying that when we're building that consistency, it should be accurate. It should be authentic. There's a sense of transparency there where if you reveal, if you're vulnerable, you're able to convey who you are, not so much in a sense of like, list out your credentials and I went to school and then I did this and then I did that. No one really cares. Instead, show us your perspective. What's your opinion on things? Write your bio in first person. We know you probably posted it and edited it. You know, it's like people need that transparent, that sense of transparency, and it usually helps you as opposed to hindering you.
And I'm guessing that if people have selected this episode to listen to, they've probably selected it for two reasons. So the first one will probably be, well, one of them might be just that they like Phil Palin and they want to hear us talking, because lots of the people that I know love you, Phil. But it may well be that people have picked out this episode because they've either got some issues with their brand and they're wondering whether their brand is consistent and whether it works, or because maybe they're starting a new venture and they're wanting to kind of almost start from scratch. But it's interesting because you were saying there that actually you already have a brand, whatever stage you're at in your business. So what would you say the first step would be to either build a brand from scratch or to improve the one that you've got already?
So it's so interesting, that question. It came up a few days ago at What Journalists Want, which I was so happy to be a part of, by the way, in London. Fantastic event. But someone asked me, Phil, how often should I look at the positioning of my business? If I've decided how I've positioned myself to do something I love to do, do I ever need to go back and revisit that? And I think the answer is yes, we should constantly look at how we've positioned ourselves. So that's taking inventory of what's out there that represents you. Also just taking inventory of what it is you love. Say you've been in business for a year or two, go back and reflect on what are the things you really loved to do. How can you make some changes in the way that you communicate who you are to make sure you can do more of those things? That was the advice I gave. And I have a personal example of that. People look at my Instagram and they look at my social media profiles and see, oh my gosh, I travel a lot. I feel like every day I have a new Snapchat filter with a new geo location. And I love to travel. I clock 60 flights plus a year. And that has only been since 2015. I spoke at a conference in Finland, Arctic 15, through a conversation I had with a dear friend, Jan Ilunga, who said, Phil, you should come to Finland and speak. I was like, that's a great idea. I don't even know where Finland is, but yeah, let's do it. So he sent me a list of conferences. I applied. I got confirmed to speak at one of them. And that was the start. That was the start of all of this. And it's what I love to do. I love to speak at conferences and meet people in that way. And it's had profound impact on my brand. But that's something that I manifested because I revisited the way that I positioned myself, the way that I communicate myself. I had a little video made that people can see on my website.
Oh yeah, I'll link to that. It's really, really fancy. It's really good, this video. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's different than what conference organizers receive. They get an email directly from me with that video actually embedded in the email. And I say, hey, this is me. I'd love to be a part of your conference. And it's just different, you know? It's different. And so that's what people need to think. How can I be memorable? Because whether you like it or not, there's a lot of people in this space that you're competing in. So you need a way to stand out and to be memorable so that you don't blend in with the crowd. Because if you blend in with the crowd, there are people that are going to take that extra step to be different that are going to get the job instead of you. And we don't want.
Because one of the things you do to show that you love to travel is that you have these little icons that you've created, haven't you? And wherever you are in the world at the time, if you send an email, or I think you do it on social media as well, people will have this special little icon which shows where Phil is at the moment.
Exactly. It's built into my email signature. It's on the homepage of my website. It's just a fun little thing that I would call sub-branding. So not just having a logo, but having a fully developed brand identity, which includes sub-branding, an opportunity to create a visual system for something that makes you interesting within your business. So for me, it's my locations. I travel like a maniac and I wouldn't have it any other way. I brand that as part of my business, as part of my lifestyle brand, if you will, as part of the experience, as what people get from me. You know that when you hire me and hire my team, I really do have an international perspective on how to do things. And I think people appreciate that. So I brand it.
And so if you're having a look at your brand and maybe doing a bit of a kind of inventory, so would you go and have a look at your social media profiles, have a look at your website? What sort of things would you be looking out for that might kind of flag up to you that maybe you aren't quite as consistent as you have been in the past?
Well, I think a good starting point is what you often tell people to do, which is start by Googling yourself. What comes up? What are the profiles that are ranked, you know, at the top? Is it LinkedIn? Is it Twitter? A lot of times just by Googling yourself and looking to see what comes up, it will spawn all kinds of reactions like, oh my gosh, I haven't updated my LinkedIn bio in a year or 2 years, or profile photos. Sometimes it's just a matter of being consistent, but also refreshing your brand to reflect your goals. That's the question that every single person needs to answer. We can't do anything until we're very crystal clear on what it is we're trying to achieve. Once we have clarity on your goals, very specifically, then we can actually map out, I would do a brand audit, which is what we've done together. It's now we know exactly what it is we're trying to achieve. And with Janet, it was world domination, I'm pretty sure. Then you map out the specifics to get there. Sometimes takes reorganizing your services. Every time it takes prioritizing what needs to be done first so that we're not trying to achieve 10 things at once and we just sit here and spin around in circles. What's first? What's second? What's most important to align with exactly what it is you're trying to accomplish? Those are the things that you need to think about before making any decisions or changes to what you have to represent you.
And I think something that surprised me when I first started working with you is when we met up for the first time, and I was kind of expecting you to sort of say to me, yeah, your logo's all right, but you need to do this, and maybe you need to switch these colours, or you need to think about this page on your website, or maybe get a completely new one. But actually, what really surprised me is that you started talking about my products and services, and you were kind of saying, well, you've got so much going on here that it's really confusing for people. And that in itself is a branding problem, isn't it? If it's not clear who you are and what you actually do.
Yes, absolutely. And your brand is a really good example of this. People can consume you in so many different ways that you obviously want to prioritize that. I mean, you are a role model in terms of being able to use so many different content types and creation platforms, blogging, podcasting, editorial placement, all of these things. I mean, you're doing this probably more than anyone else that I know, and it's amazing. But obviously, you know, day to day, that's a lot to handle. So you are very good. I think you've become very good at prioritizing what's most important. And I remember your answer to that, which was events, right? And look at these amazing events that you've pulled off. But I think in part, it's because you've prioritized and realized it's a really powerful way to inspire people. It's also a very good business move because you've obviously got a knack for it. And so to be able to prioritize that, I think is really helping you. And we can all see that growth. I mean, your brand growth over the last 2 years is just incredible. So it's exciting to watch.
Well, something that always sort of flags up for me when I think my brand needs a bit of a refresh is when I feel like I'm offering too many things. So having worked with you, yeah, recently we had another session, didn't we? And it was because I felt like I'd grown and changed and I was back to offering too many things again. So I'm currently in the process of slimming that down again and offering less things, but really trying to concentrate on the things that I'm good at. And I know you talk about people having a brand sentence, don't you? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I believe to appease the short attention spans of 2016 and beyond, people should be able to communicate their value in one sentence. And I call it a brand sentence. And I know I'm not the only one that calls it that, but it's really, really important to distill things down. When I read an about page on someone's website before they've worked with me, it'll often list credentials and a lot of detail about someone's background. And I'm usually the one to say to them, look, no one really cares. And it's actually a disservice to you if you spend so many words describing yourself, because online, even if it's not true, you look a little obsessed with yourself if you spend that much time and expect us to read it, read the Bible that is your about page. Instead, shorten, focus, be concise, because it's actually very powerful to say something in much fewer words. And more importantly, it's a better chance at being memorable, because if you can communicate who you are in one sentence, then I get it right away, right off the top. Who are you? Why should I care? Not just in the way you communicate yourself, but it's very powerful when you start to see your brand sentence be communicated by others. And I told this story at What Journalists Want at the event, because I've got a client that I've had for a few years who is a celebrity hairstylist. And I got to attend a celebrity gala with him a few months ago, where I don't know these celebrities. He does. And he introduced me. He was so gracious, introduced me to many of them. And he described me and what I do in one sentence. And I had no control over that, but because I branded myself well, and I'm adamant about this, I got to watch my brand sentence in action when he's introducing me to others. So think about going back to Jeff Bezos, and your brand is what people what people say about you when you're not in the room. That's a really powerful thing, because those conversations are happening.
Yeah, and what I find really interesting about this is that people are often so uncomfortable about that brand sentence because they're uncomfortable with the idea of being a specialist, which, you know, for me, yeah, being a specialist is a great thing, because, you know, particularly from my point of view, journalists, they don't want to deal with jacks of all trades or jewels of all trades, whatever you want to call it. They want specialists, and they want to have that go-to person. They know that they can pick up the phone, and if they're writing a story on, I don't know, celebrity hairstyles or whatever, they want the person to go to. But I find that a lot of people that I work with, they're really uncomfortable about this. And they say, the phrase they use all the time is, I don't want to be pigeonholed. I don't want to be pigeonholed, which I find really bizarre. However, personally, I've struggled with it a little bit, because journalists and PRs generally tend to be on different sides of the fence. And so when people call me a PR lady, it really, really gets my goat, because I'm a, you know, I see myself as a journalist. However, I realize from a branding point of view that it's not very helpful. And really that when people are calling me a PR lady, or when they're saying, oh, she's the one who does PR, or she's the one that knows about PR, even though that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, actually, that's probably the most helpful thing for my brand ever, because people think of me now and they think of PR. And that's pretty much what you want, isn't it?
It is. And I love that you're being open-minded in terms of being aware of that perception, aware of the ways that people are describing you, whether you like it or not. And rather than just rejecting it and correcting people, you're giving thought to, okay, wait, why is this happening? And I can, as an outsider, this is my job, it's very easy for me to explain why. I think PR itself has a bad reputation. And if anyone knows this, it's a journalist, you know? There's just this understanding a lot of times of PR that it's smoke and mirrors, that it's a waste of time and money. And I think it's a compliment to you, because being a journalist is what qualifies you to have such a strong grasp on how PR can be done effectively. So in my opinion, it's actually a compliment the way people are kind of connecting you to that world, because, and I've told you this before, I'm not a big fan of PR. And the reason you and I work together so well is we work together in tandem. We're on the same page on so many things, because you bring so much substance to this topic that often lacks that in a lot of other arenas and brands. So it's interesting though, isn't it, to observe that, but you've done what's right, which is, instead of just reject it, you've actually been open-minded to the idea that, okay, this is happening for a reason. Let's understand why, and how can I embrace that in a way that's going to help me?
Yeah, I just know it's beneficial to my business. And I know that, you know, as a journalist myself, I've always wanted to deal with specialists. I know when it comes to clients, people don't want to deal with somebody who does a little bit of this, a little bit of that. They want, you know, the genuine article. They want the expert. So as much as it feels a little bit uncomfortable, I feel it's kind of the right thing to do, and that I'll grow into it, and I will probably start to feel more comfortable with it. But when we talked a lot about what my title was going to be, didn't we, when we were working together, and we settled on journalist and PR coach, because yeah, I didn't feel quite comfortable, because for me, that's my story. That's why I do what I do. You know, what inspired me to write my book and to do the work that I do was having years of being a journalist and just seeing PR being done so badly. So it is kind of part of my brand story, but I have to bite my lip quite a lot, especially when people call me a PR lady. It's horrible. I hate it. But yeah, I think, well, at least, yeah, you know, at least people know what I do, and they know where to come to if they need help. And that leads me into something else I wanted to ask you about, actually, which was about pages, because I had a really interesting conversation going on in my Facebook group the other day, where a lady had posted this really, it was a lovely, lovely about page story for her website. And it was a really nice story. But I said to her, she asked for some feedback on what people thought. And I said to her, I really like your story. However, I think people don't really care about you. And I know that sounds awful, but when new people visit your site, I don't think people care that much. All they're thinking is, how can you help me? So instead of having this lovely story about yourself and your background and what inspired you, actually, you just need to start with you, and you need to be saying, look, here's how I can help you. And then, you know, maybe you can give them a bit of background story afterwards. What are your thoughts on that?
I love that. I'm constantly encouraging people to think and do differently when it comes to your about page. It's so funny. Conference organizers will sometimes make comments, or if I, you know, if I'm writing a bio for, you know, an article or all different kinds of context, but they'll say to me, Phil, why is your bio so short? I'm like, well, it'll probably come up in the podcast interview or, you know, whatever we talk about when it comes to branding, because I intentionally keep my bio short, knowing that the shorter it is, the more control I have over ensuring that they read it top to bottom. So your bio, I think almost always, sometimes I make a few exceptions, but almost always should be written in first person, depending on your brand. It's usually, you know, if you're direct, if you're in the service industry and you're helping people, they want to connect with you. We're recreating that first experience, that in-person experience rather. So if you wouldn't introduce yourself in third person in conversation, so you shouldn't do it online. Also think about your website navigation. People are so inclined to have like 20, 30, 40 pages. Condense it, because again, fewer number of pages means more control over that first impression. It's more likely people will go to every page. And that's what's really powerful, is having that control. So just thinking about ways to be concise. If it takes you five sentences, how can you say it in one? And don't be afraid. It's always hard to do this stuff for ourselves. As you and I know, Janet, we call on each other for help and outside perspectives, but our job is to help others. And so it's second nature to us, but ask for the help of an expert, or ask the help of peers around you to give perspective so that you can make some more informed decisions about yourself, you, the product. Even if you sell a product, you're still part of that experience, that branding experience. So to get outside perspective is really, really important.
Well, I just kind of feel that when somebody comes to your website for the first time and they don't know anything about you, all they really are thinking is, can this person help me? You know, I need some help with my branding, or I need some help with PR, marketing, whatever it can be. And if when they get to your about page, they just see a kind of 500 word bio where you talk about, you know, where you were born. And believe me, I've done all of this before. I've changed my about page a million times, and I probably change it at least every few weeks as well. But I'm sort of slowly coming around to the idea that actually people, you know, we're all selfish content consumers, and we just want to know what's in it for us. So once you start to build a relationship with somebody, then yeah, you know, they're going to find out more about your story. But I sort of feel like on your about page, or even when people come to your social media bios, that they should first of all see what's in it for them, and you kind of infuse your personality into that in different ways. And I know you do this on Twitter, don't you? Because you have your little trick that you share with people to do a bio, but it's like, this is what I do and this is why you should care. And I just feel like the kind of, you know, what's in it for me bit should come first. But is that something that you agree with?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point. If someone's on your website, they're trying to figure out, okay, where's the value that this person will bring to my life? Even if it's not working as a client, it could be, you know, having a new friend. This is how human brains work. I'm not a psychologist, but I know that people are self-serving, whether you like it or not. It's how we operate. So when I meet someone new, I'm thinking, okay, is this person a great person that can become a great friendship? Is this someone that I want to hire? You know, maybe not now, but maybe in the future, maybe I can work together with this person. You need to be ready to convey your value, and you need to be able to look at yourself from the outside and take inventory of you, know your strengths, know areas that you can improve, and constantly just have that self-awareness. The more self-aware you are, the more likely you're going to succeed in this world nowadays.
And how do you get a sense of how other people see you? What do you advise your clients to do?
Yeah, I think it's as easy as asking others around you. So I often tell people, okay, describe yourself in three words. What three words would you use? Write them down, and then go to five friends in all different spaces and areas of your life. How would they describe you? And I think if you do this exercise, a few times, you'll start to see common themes pop up. That's one small step that I can give you in terms of achieving that consistency. How do others perceive you? How can you make sure that that is taken into consideration when you're building your online platform, from the brand sentence on the homepage of your website to the bio that you use to describe you, even everything from, LinkedIn endorsements. I mean, it just touches so many different things that just being self-aware will help you achieve consistency.
And I know when we met for the first time, you actually recorded me talking about myself and my business. So I guess you could do something like that, couldn't you? Or, chat with your friend about your business and record it and see, because you were actually picking out words and phrases that I was using, which I didn't realize were the kind of words and phrases I used about my business, but actually it was really useful to hear them back.
So much of the gold comes from discussing and sharing in conversation. Mm. It's a magical thing that people do because it's second nature. But when you talk about yourself, you talk about others in quick little, conversational nuggets, that's when you're able to so eloquently and casually describe things that need to be communicated in exactly the same way online. It's like, as soon as someone sits down in front of a Word document or in front of a website page, it's like they just go into this different mindset of formality, like you're writing an essay in college. It's not that way. What you say in conversation is how you should also say it online.
I mean, I was saying to you things like, there's no nice way of saying this, wasn't I? I was prefacing my sentences with things like that. And I didn't
If you remember, we wrote your book title too, in that session, right? We came up with that because you just said something that was just so funny. And I was like, there's your book title.
Phil said to me, we were talking about the book because I was saying that I had an idea for a book and wanted to write a book. I said, but I don't want to call it Soulful PR. I don't know why. I just don't feel that's right. And he said, well, call it something else then. What's your best ever blog post? And I said, well, it's actually called Your Press Release is Breaking My Heart. And he was like, that's it. That's the title of your book. Yeah. And actually, a lot of people said to me, well, why didn't you call it Soulful PR? Because you've got the podcast, that's your brand. And I was like, it just didn't feel right. But Your Press Release is Breaking My Heart, that sentence tells the story of why I do what I do and why I decided to write the book. So I've been interviewed on various podcasts about the book, and the interviewer will often say, well, clearly from the title of the book, you don't really need to explain why you wrote it, but go on, tell us anyway. So I felt it's got a bit of a kind of, it's got a little bit of attitude in it. I'm not a particularly attitude-y type person, but it's got a little bit of that kind of slightly rebellious attitude-ness. That's not even a word, is it? But that's kind of part of me.
People remember it. Yeah. And I think, you know what? It is in tune with your personality. You're a no BSer. And in the PR world, there's a lot of BS. And the reason you're this way is because you're a journalist. So this sentence really encapsulates you in such a beautiful way, beautiful, memorable way. And that's totally in line with the feedback you're getting. Right? So that's like mission accomplished.
Well, that's actually what I've started using on my social media profiles at the moment. So at the moment, and I do change it quite a lot because I'm always reviewing it, but it says, no BS advice on getting coverage in newspapers, magazines, radio, and TV. Because, maybe that isn't quite the right phrase. Maybe it will come to me, but that's pretty much what it is. For me, it's just like really practical, no nonsense advice. I'm not going to give you any of this PR fluff stuff. this is just practical advice coming from somebody who really does know and that works. And so that's what I'm going with at the moment. And that's what you're very keen to encourage people to do, particularly on social media profiles, isn't it? Is to kind of have something that tells people what you do, but at the same time gives a hint of your personality.
Exactly. If you can achieve that in one sentence, then that shows self-awareness. That shows you've given some thought to what makes you strong. If you can throw all of those elements together into one, two sentences max for your social profiles, fantastic.
Okay. Now, can you quickly tell us your formula for writing Twitter bios? Because this is useful.
Yes, the formula for writing your Twitter bio or even any social profile bio, and they can be differently slightly across platforms. I'll give an example. On Instagram, I show my locations of where I am now and where I'm going next with the little flag icons, because I use my Instagram to document my travel adventures. But the formula for writing your bio is sentence one, tell me who you are and why people should care. Second sentence, give us some indication, some element, a little flair of your personality. because that's where we need to overcompensate online, because we're not together in real life having a conversation. So how can we get a sense of your personality up front? So mine is brand strategist for TV personalities, experts, and businesses. First sentence, who you are, why people should care. Second sentence, if your baby's ugly, it's my job to tell you. And that usually has people cracking up a little bit. And if they find that funny, then that's a good indication that we would, you know, probably get along great, which is a good quality to have when you're working together. You know, and likewise, if people are offended by that, maybe you don't want me as a partner. And, you know, and it's so funny because people will send me pictures of their children, which is a bit weird. Yeah. But, you know, as a joke, it's like, you know, what do you think? You know, but people get it. And it's indicative of my personality. And then when they meet me in real life, I've had people say to me, Phil, I love your book. I love that I've met you now in real life because the book sounds like the way that you talk. And that always makes me really happy because it was very intentional.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because we've been talking now for over 30 minutes, but we haven't even got to visuals. Like, we've been just talking about perception, haven't we? We've been talking about words. We've been talking about pages, because I think often when people are thinking about branding, they're thinking all about visuals, aren't they?
Yeah, they usually think that it's all visuals, but we've been really discussing in a lot more detail the things to consider when you're positioning, which is actually more important. Positioning comes first. Once we're very clear on how we're communicating, who we are, and why we're doing what we do, then the visuals are used to complement that.
Right.
Visuals are key. Photography, your brand identity, your website, and your social profiles. Those are the things you want to give consideration to, and all of those things should be working together to communicate that.
Now, before we get there, there was one thing I wanted to pick up on, actually, in what you were saying. Was you said some people may not like me. So from my Twitter bio, they may read that and some people will say, well, actually, I don't think I want to work with him. That's important too, isn't it? That you repel the people.
Yeah, it's important to have a stance. It's important to have an opinion. And you and I have actually talked about this off the record. But as your brand starts to grow and you start to grow your audience, there are going to be people that are not always going to perceive you in a positive way, or that are not going to like your style. They're going to complain. They're going to say, you know, they're going to reject whatever it is you do. And that's totally okay. Sometimes people ask me, okay, I've got people commenting on my YouTube channel and they're saying really mean things. And I say to them, any attention is a form of compliment, because we're all going to die. And if people spend a few minutes of their day, of their lifetime, dedicated to giving you attention, then you've done something very powerful. Even if it's negative, even if you're getting trolled, it's going to happen. The bigger you grow, the more chance you're going to get negativity, because people are just unfortunately drawn to it online. But take it as a compliment. Have thick skin and know that people are spending their time, which is a limited resource. Content is not a limited resource. Everyone's creating content on the web. What we're all chasing is people's time and attention. And if others are giving you that, then you're doing something right.
I love that. It's a really interesting way of looking at it, because as you know, I think my brand and my following has grown quite a lot in the last few months. And as well as getting a lot of really positive comments and emails, I've also started to get more critical emails and more people being mean to me. And it is easy, I think, when that happens, to think, oh my God, I'm doing something wrong. You know, I've got something wrong about my brand. And it's just so easy to forget that actually that means that you are probably doing something right, because you have to, in order to attract the right people, you also are going to repel some people as well. That's just kind of how it works, isn't it?
It's exactly how it works. And it's really hard when it's ourselves, because if we are the brand, and that's obviously a trick statement, because of course we are the brand. Even if you're selling a product, you are still a part of this story, this sell, you know. It's easy to take it personally, because it is personal, because we are building a personal brand, even if that's an extension from a product. So it is personal, but you have to get to the point where you've got thick skin and you can look at yourself from the outside and not be offended personally if someone has something negative to say.
So they're rejecting the brand rather than you as a person.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
It's hard.
Okay. I wanted to talk about physical appearance, because I find this stuff really, really interesting. How important is how you look when it comes to your brand?
Yeah. I think it's overrated in terms of always trying to look beautiful. Sometimes people get all dolled up for their photo shoots. I say, okay, it's time for some updated photos. And then they're so focused on makeup, hair, outfits, In 5 years of doing this, I've never told someone what to wear for their photo shoot. My advice is always wear something that makes you feel awesome, that makes you feel like a rock star. What would you put on if you were going to meet the president or the prime minister? You know, what it may be in your closet, maybe something you need to go buy, and then you can just return it the next day if you don't want to keep it. But I care more about that than I do about little colors. And don't look a way that's inauthentic to how we can experience you day to day. It's a disservice. So people get so focused. Oh, I need to look like a model on Instagram. No. You need to look like yourself. It's achieving consistency, and that will help you in a positive way. But be aware also, your brand considers all of that. Your brand also takes into consideration what you're wearing, right? People notice these things, and it should be consistent with what you're trying to achieve and what you're building to communicate you. So everything from what is it you wear when you speak at a conference? I have two beautiful Armani suits that I've probably worn twice because I don't wear suits. It's not really my brand. I kind of go against convention in that I built a business without any corporate experience. I never want to look corporate. I kind of want to look like a kid that's trying to dress up and, you know, but I mean, so I usually wear like I'm pretty casual because that is me. That is me. And I'm aware of that. So
I have to say, you did make an exception though last week when you spoke at my conference, didn't you? So Phil was wearing this very fetching brown jacket. I said to him, like, Phil, you can be Phil, but maybe a little bit more corporate than usual because the audience is a bit more corporate. So Phil turns up in this very preppy brown jumper, which was very, very fetching. But it was interesting because that was the kind of slightly more corporate Phil, wasn't it?
Right. You still didn't get a suit jacket.
No, you didn't.
Got a sweater and a dress shirt and dress pants. I actually thought about wearing my suit that day, and last minute in the morning, I decided not to wear the jacket and just wear a leather jacket instead because it felt more authentic to me. Yeah. I think if I went in a full suit, people would be like, are you going to a funeral? Because it's just not what I wear. Mm. It's not what I... But then I also am familiar with, you know, cultural implications and all kinds of things. I wear a suit if I do a talk in Asia, for example, because it's just, it's almost like more of a sign of respect. And so, you know, being able to travel around the world, I get to still infuse my brand, but also just kind of adapt for those kinds of things. And I was appreciated that you said, okay, Phil, this was corporate, you know, and it was more corporate. So you get to kind of have fun with that, but also stay true to your brand.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's quite a lot of chat going on in my Facebook group about this recently because I had a piece, I think I've told this story on the podcast before, so I won't go into it in great detail, but I had a piece in the Daily Mail about why I wear makeup when I'm running. And the Daily Mail, as it is wont to do, had totally twisted the content of my story and written this headline, which actually said, why I wear makeup all the time and you should too, which was a completely different story. It was what I'd written was actually why I wear makeup when I was running, or when I am running, in fact. So this article in the Daily Mail, it sparked quite an interesting conversation in my Facebook group, and women were giving their views on other women who wear makeup, and some were saying they never ever wore makeup, others were saying they wouldn't go out without the stuff. And what was interesting is that the kind of message that was coming across to me is that women who wear makeup all the time are somehow less authentic than women who don't, and it's a mask and all this kind of stuff. And it was really, really interesting because I was saying to people that makeup, not wearing makeup, could be part of your brand just as much as wearing makeup could be part of your brand. But, you know, people do kind of make a judgment on you because of it, and it's part of your whole package. And really your brand and your the way that you present yourself, sort of your appearance, is so much part of your brand, and you just might be sort of turning it up and turning it down for different contexts, which is really kind of what you were explaining with your Japan example, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Just to be aware of how you're being perceived by others, and to be also, you know, if you travel, be culturally sensitive. I mean, even Asia is a really good example. Giving business cards is a whole other experience and something you need to be ready for. I actually wrote a blog post about it because it was someone pulled me aside who had experience in the US and in Asia. And he said, I'm going to show you how to do this so that you know how to do it, because just handing a business card to someone very casually is actually not respectful. In Japan, there's a certain way you do it. And I wrote this in the blog post. And what we can learn from this, it's a whole system. You hold on to it with two hands, you hand it, you put your business card below that next, you know, below that person's card when you present yours. People will read like every word of it. It's actually really cute. But like, you got to be aware of this when you travel, because and you have to be aware of what to wear. It's all part of your brand, whether you wear makeup, whether you don't. all of this is part of that first impression that you've had involvement, obviously, in crafting.
Okay. Well, now let's quickly talk about visuals then. So this is really what people often ask me when it comes to branding. What kind of photographs should I have? What kind of images should I be using across social media?
It's a question I get really, really often as well. In fact, this was inspired by being at your conference the other day, but I am very soon, by the time this podcast will be live, it should already be live, but I'm going to create a one sheet of advice on what to tell your photographer when it comes to shooting your photos for your brand, because there are set criteria that you need to follow. Left and right justified photos. Show me context, right? I don't want to just see you against plain white wall. I want to see an environment that is indicative of your personality. Create that feeling, that environment. Use visuals as a way to stand out from the crowd. This podcast is all about being memorable. Visuals, I often say, are the one way, the one area that often gets, you know, skimped on compared to the rest, right? I tell people, if you're going to spend money on a dress or a suit, then you should be spending that kind of money, if not more, on your photos, because more people are going to see your photos online, your display photo, for example, than are going to see you wearing that outfit once or twice.
And the advice you often give is that your photograph should tell a story about your brand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Because that visual, yeah. And I have examples of this on my website as well. I usually try and document my projects and my work. And you can see, you know, I don't normally do before and afters because I can't take credit for the befores. But, you know, at conferences, I share those because it's pretty powerful to see photos that people think, you know, they went to a headshot photographer, for example. You know, and there's no real sense of their brand. If you can just incorporate that into the visuals, you know, I can get a sense of what it is you do, then I don't even necessarily need words to provide context. We get it right away. And it just helps us arrive at that conclusion that we talked about earlier. It's like, who is this person? What value do they bring to me? If I'm more clear on that and I can convey that through the visuals themselves, then you're one step closer to that consistency.
Can you talk quickly about that? I think it's a couple that you worked with in Australia who had the food truck, because you did some interesting stuff with their visuals, didn't you?
Yes. They are on my website. The brand is called Siganos. So if you go onto my website and click work, you'll see the food truck. I branded the first food truck on the Gold Coast of Australia. And it was a really, really interesting experience because we, you know, the food even itself changed as the business developed before launch. So we had to go through a series of different photography and steps, and the business has been very successful. You'll see the photography and how that communicates the brand. It's bright, it's warm, it's edgy. All of these qualities fit the brand itself, but it's pretty amazing to see before and afters of like, okay, you know, sometimes photography is not great when you get started, but you should constantly strive to keep your photos awesome because it's a big part of how we're making our first impression.
And I remember you showing a picture of the food photos that they had before you started working with them, and they were like dodgy kebab shop photos. They were horrible.
Yes,
and you just changed the packaging, I think, that you put the food in. Is that right? And immediately,
yeah,
it just looks so much better.
Exactly. Packaging, presentation, even if you're settled on something. I mean, I even have wrapping paper that's branded.
Really?
yeah. All of my branding clients, I send them a little embosser with their logo as a thank you for hiring. And it's wrapped in Phil Palin Collective wrapping paper.
Oh, I love it.
Little string and all my little cons and stuff. Yeah, these are things that people notice. And so I think it's important to spend time on the details.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you're saying that things like the wrapping paper, or, I mean, I have, for example, these little feedback cards, which I share on Instagram, which have little smiley faces. Instead of, you know, getting people to do a questionnaire, we just get them to do this little kind of card. We have our own branded stickers. So where we send somebody out a book, they'll get the kind of nice looking branding, and we package them up in a certain way.
You're so good at it. And the branding for your events is always so, so top notch. I love the feedback cards. I love the little itineraries. And you even take it to the next level. You've got your notebooks, which is probably an idea I'm going to be strongly inspired by. I won't copy you, but I'll be strongly inspired. I was thinking about that because in the new year, I write a new book, and I want to have like a little notebook that I can, you know, package as a little trio. So I've got the two books and then a notebook. But, you know, and you even, Jenny, you take it to the next level. You've got candy in your brand colors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that is amazing. You know, and it's fun.
At my event the other day, and for those who don't know what candy, my daughter says candy, actually. She's obviously been watching too much American TV.
Sweets,
right? I mean. So we had like bonbons, so traditional British sweets. So we had strawberry bonbons, lemon bonbons, and then we had these kind of like chewy sweets in a kind of greeny color, which are basically these Soulful PR. It's basically Soulful PR branding colours straight from the star sheet. And people were helping themselves. We had these little scoops as well, and people were helping themselves to old-fashioned like British sweets in the Soulful PR colours. We've had cake pops. We've had cake pops done before as well in the Soulful PR branding.
Yeah, I remember the cake pops. Yeah. Those were delicious, but I got to try so many of those fun little bonbons, the ones that taste like church wafers with sugar in them. I never tasted those before.
Yeah.
Someone, I can't remember who it was at your event, they described it as church wafers on crack, which is kind of funny because it looked
like
Oh my God, they were so good. They were so good. I want to bring them all home. It's like, look at these amazing like candies from England.
But these things, they do make you memorable, don't they? Just the wrapping paper, the bonbons, the feedback cards. And so I guess what you're saying is
absolutely.
Just think about these kind of things that will make you stand out.
Yes. Think about ways that you can be memorable. Here we are talking about it. I'm sure that this is not the only time that this has come up in conversation, probably conversations that we're not even a part of. That's amazing, right?
Yep.
That you can have an impact that has people talking about you beyond just what you're aware of.
And also the branded stuff, like whenever I share pictures of my notebook, my book, which has a beautiful looking cover, I've taken some photos to use on Instagram over the next few weeks of the bonbons, so people will be able to see those. And the nice, we had nice stripy sweet bags as well. But all of this stuff you can use on your social media as well to make your brand stronger and more consistent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap up because Phil's got to go to brunch now. But we've done, when it comes to branding, you talk about position, don't you? You talk about build, and then you talk about promote. Now, we've definitely done position and build, haven't we? And I do the promote bit, so, you know, you can get that on the rest of my podcast. So I think all remains to say is tell us a little bit about what you've got coming up and also how we can find you online.
Absolutely. I'm so, so excited. And that's exactly how I described it at the conference. I said, Janet often focuses on the promote. And I'm so, so happy and excited to receive invitations from you to be a part of those events, especially when they're all journalists as guest speakers, plus me.
Yeah.
And so I'm honored to be able to help people with those first two steps so that when they go to promote their brands with your amazing strategies, it's that much more effective. You know, we have a house we take to market that people want to buy. So I have some exciting projects in the works. As always, I am very soon launching Phil Palin Academy. So Phil Palin Collective is my agency that works one-on-one with personal brands and startups and businesses around the world. But I'm launching a platform that I think your listeners, some of your listeners are what prompted me to actually create something like this. A more do-it-yourself type platform where people can be inspired to take strategies developed in the closed Facebook group, live coaching call every month, videos. I've already filmed set videos that we'll release one a week. And each month there'll be a particular theme, or we're going to call it a focus, on one area of your brand that we can really discuss in detail and that I've never been able to do before because I'm always working one-on-one with people. So that is launching very, very soon. People can check out philpalin.co. my website, to get all the details on that and to sign up. And then I'm writing a new book in the new year. I'm sure by then you and I will have brand new conversations, so I'll wait to talk too much about that. But the best way people can find me on Twitter, at Phil Palin, and to also check out my podcast, which is called No Filter. And you, to return the favor, not even on purpose, will be my first guest that will be returning. So that's coming up soon. And the podcast is No Filter, N-O-P-H-I-L-T-E-R, filter, but spelled the Phil way.
Okay, the Phil way. Everything's always on the Phil way, isn't it? Well, thanks. Well, thanks so much for that. It's good to talk to you again. And I'm sure that people will get loads of really great nuggets of information from this episode. So I better let you get off and go to your brunch.
Thank you so much. I always love every time, every minute, every second spent having conversation with you. And I look forward to connecting with everyone on Twitter and keeping the conversation going.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come over and join my Facebook group? It's simply the Soulful PR Facebook community, and I'd love to see you there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.